Yeah, it's been a hard struggle, but I've been trying to stay the course. I'm trying to, you know, do something, you know, righteous with my life.
You're listening to Kite Line on WFHB Community Radio.
I'm Emma Johnson.
And I'm Mia Beach.
And we're your hosts for this program.
Behind the prison walls, a message is called a kite. Whispered words, a note passed hand to hand, or a request submitted to the guards for medical care. Illicit or not, sending a kite means trusting that other people will bear it farther along until it reaches its destination. On Kite Line, we hope to pass along words across those prison walls.
This week's episode of Kite Line will be devoted entirely to a cause that is close to many of us on the outside, the struggle of our friend and political prisoner, Bomani Shakur, known to the state as Keith Lamar.
But first, we start out with some news and call-in information. Updates on Marius Mason, news on repression from Kinross Correctional Facility in northern Michigan, where one of the larger strike actions occurred on September 9th, and some call-ins to support Indiana prisoners in need. Let's get started. Some prisoners are asking the public to call Wabash Valley Correctional Facility Superintendent Richard Brown and Indiana Department of Corrections Commissioner Bruce Lemon to protest the ongoing torture of inmates in disciplinary segregation at Wabash Valley Correctional Facility. You can call Richard Brown at 812-398-5050 or Bruce Lemon at 317-232-5711. A possible script could be, I'm calling to protest the ongoing torture of prisoners in disciplinary segregation at Wabash Valley Correctional Facility. The prisoners are being tortured by slow starvation and exceedingly cold temperatures in the cell. The food rations these prisoners are receiving are dangerously insufficient, and the staff keeps the AC on so high that prisoners are constantly cold. Please examine the practices of staff at Wabash Valley Correctional Facility in regard to the provision of food to inmates in disciplinary segregation and their operation of the heating and cooling system in that unit. Also, please repair the sink in the cell of James Phillips, DOC number 106333, because it's currently broken to the point that he can't get water to drink unless he puts his mouth directly on the faucet. Thank you. Here's a letter from James Phillips, the prisoner in question. From James Phillips, number 106333, Wabash Valley Correctional Facility. To whom it may concern. My name is James Phillips, and I'm a mentally ill offender at Wabash Valley Correctional Facility. Since I've been at this facility, I've endured and been subject to abuse and harsh conditions on all levels. Last fall and winter, I was housed in K Housing Unit, which is a special needs program for inmates with mental illness, and after a month into attending the program, my mental illness symptoms had increased dramatically due to abuse, stress, and ineffective treatment. The cells have no heat in the wintertime, and we receive lukewarm air at best, and most of the time we have to sleep in all of our clothes, even our coats, just to stay warm. The areas where officers are and patrol have fairly good heating, and the temperature difference outside the cell is considerably warmer than that inside the cells. I've filed numerous complaints, and nothing has been done about this matter. Also, while attending this program, I've been racially targeted by officers and harassed daily, verbally and mentally, and received bogus conduct reports that are not true. I've also found that inmates in regular population have been subjected to the same abuse and conditions. In February, I was assaulted by two inmates, and in return, I defended myself and was discharged out of the special needs program and sent to a lockup unit, which violates my mental health code because it worsens my mental health condition. The two inmates who assaulted me were not even sent to a lockup unit and got to stay in the program, which is unfair and biased. I believe I was singled out because I filed numerous complaints exposing the wrongdoing of officers and staff involved in the program. While in CCU lockup unit, my mental health symptoms have gotten worse. I started hallucinating and seeing worms in my food, so I quit eating and was brutally sprayed with mace and OC gas because I couldn't get to my feet quick enough to be handcuffed. I didn't eat for 11 days. I was then placed in a cell designed for holding inmates temporarily passing through, which had no toilet, sink, or running water, for 3 days. I had to use the restroom on the floor and had no water to drink, nor did I have proper bedding because the cell wasn't designed for overnight stays, so I slept on the floor. I was then removed from that holding cell and placed back in the contaminated cell where I had been sprayed. They never cleaned the cell like they were supposed to. I still struggle with paranoid thoughts of incidents I've been subjected to and that I've seen others be subjected to. Since I've been in the CCU lockup unit, I've lost 35 pounds due to lack of food being placed on trays or small portions, which is done as a deterrent so offenders will not want to come back to a lockup unit. I filed complaints about this, and also nothing has happened. Also, officers are leaving us in the showers for over an hour after we finish showering as a deterrent to prevent us from coming out of our cells to take showers, which makes their jobs easier. Every day is a constant struggle and a different form of abuse. They are also tearing up our cells during shakedowns when we come out to go to rec or shower to prevent us from coming out. It's crazy here at this facility because the staff rarely follow IDOC policy. We have another call-in for a prisoner at Wabash Valley. Ronald White is being charged with possession of synthetic marijuana for having some basil and theft for having vegetables that were given to him. They gave him 2 write-ups for these situations, but his supporters are hoping that, with some public support, they will realize that the write-ups weren't representative of the actual situation. If people want to help, they can call into Wabash Valley to ask that they test for synthetic marijuana so they can see that it's basil and let them know that he was given the vegetables and that they were not stolen. Also, if you have the time to write, please write Ronald at Ronald White, number 157703, Wabash Valley Correctional Facility, P.O. Box 1111, Carlisle, Indiana, 47838. You can call and talk to anyone in the admin office or call Superintendent Brown at 812-398-5050, extension 4101, or Assistant Superintendent Frank Littlejohn at 812-398-5050, extension 4502, or you could also have some luck with extension 3624. More information on these call-ins can be found at our website, kitelineradio.noblogs.org. Now we have some news from prisons and prisoners around the country in the wake of the national prison strike.
According to prisoners in the Deer Ridge Prison in Oregon, there's a new wave of repression against labor organizing in the facility. A number of prisoners have been to administrative segregation, while others have been subjected to cell searches, looking for written materials related to organizing.
At the Kinross Prison in northern Michigan, the site of an uprising in September linked to the national prison strike, 3 prisoners have turned up dead under suspicious circumstances. The local National Lawyers Guild is working with other outside organizers to help break the information embargo surrounding the prison and investigate the situation.
At Holman Prison, another prisoner in solitary confinement committed suicide. According to organizers with the Free Alabama Movement, Robert D'Angelo Carter hanged himself after prison officials failed to deliver the mental health care he had requested. Quote, "We screamed, we kicked, we banged, but no one ever came," Kinetic Justice, who is also held in solitary confinement at Holman, said on Twitter. "He just hanged."
This defiant statement by Holman prisoners in C-Dorm was just sent to the Anarchist Black Cross Conference in Denver. Clenched fist salute. I don't want to take up too much time, but we rebel prisoners in C-Dorm want to express our thanks for your support and solidarity during the strikes, and for Holman in particular. At this time, Holman is being occupied by the riot squad to restore order to a space that we created based on self-management. There are daily confrontations between us and them. We will continue to resist. We ask that you all keep an eye on Holman. They are trying to break the resistance, smash the Free Alabama movement, and continue business as it was before the resistance. We ask that you all continue to attack the state and all of its institutions. We call on all freedom-loving, oppression-hating hackers to attack the judicial and criminal justice system. Let's continue to make everything ungovernable. We end this by sending strength and solidarity. Signed, C-Dorm Uncontrollables.
On April 11, 1993, the longest prison uprising in U.S. history broke out at the Southern Ohio Correctional Facility in Lucasville. For 11 days, the facility fell into the hands of the inmates. By the end of the uprising, 9 prisoners and 1 guard lay dead. From any reasonable point of view, the riot was the result of the repressive and inhumane conditions inside the prison. Lucasville had long been one of the most violent institutions in the United States. In the late 80s and early 90s, a new administration had implemented a draconian system of restrictions and punishments, culminating in a forced tuberculosis test rejected by Muslim prisoners because of its use of alcohol. It was the straw that broke the camel's back, and prisoners from all walks of life participated in the eruption. The state of Ohio sought to deflect blame onto the inmates themselves. In the following wave of repression, dozens were given increased sentences, many sentenced to life in prison, and 5 sentenced to death. One of those 5 was Keith Lamar. Keith was born and raised a black man in a segregated and prejudiced Cleveland, Ohio. Ultimately, it was a robbery and shootout that left one person dead and Keith severely wounded that landed him in Lucasville. Keith did not take part in the uprising, but ultimately it was his rigorous commitment to truth and his outspoken criticism of the prison that put a target on his back. The prosecution found him a convenient scapegoat, and Keith was found guilty by an all-white jury in southern Ohio. He has been on death row ever since, most of that time in solitary confinement. He has not once ceased to maintain his innocence, nor has he remained silent about the oppression that he and all other people suffer day to day in this white supremacist capitalist society. Last year, Keith, now at the Ohio State Penitentiary in Youngstown, went on hunger strike to protest his conditions and arbitrary restrictions placed on his access to music and reading materials. With the help of organizations and individuals around the country, every demand was won. But Keith still faces his biggest fight, and his very life is at stake. Despite the intent of the state of Ohio to kill him, and the daily struggle he faces on the inside, Keith continues to be a heroic voice for justice, giving public talks every month on issues from police murder to the prison industrial complex. Here now is Keith in his own words.
My name is Keith Lamar. I'm a death row prisoner at the Ohio State Penitentiary in Youngstown, Ohio. In 1995, I was sentenced to death for a crime I did not commit. According to the state, I was said to have participated in the deaths of five inmates who were suspected of being informants. When I refused to become an informant myself and refused the state's offer of a plea bargain, I was prosecuted and prevented from presenting evidence of my innocence, even a statement from an actual perpetrator who admitted to killing someone for whom I was ultimately convicted and sentenced to death. I'm innocent. I didn't kill anyone during the uprising, and the state knew this. And they knew it because multiple witnesses came forward and pointed the finger at someone else. But because I was vocal in my criticisms of them and the way in which we were treated before and after the uprising, they decided to make an example out of me. And now they intend to kill me, strap me down to a cold gurney, and pump poison through my veins. I intend to stop them. Indeed, inasmuch as my life is not for them to take, I intend to fight them. And if you believe in my plight, I hope you will join me in this fight. Not just to undo what was done to me, but to undo the injustice of a system that is too often used as a weapon against the poor, against nameless, faceless individuals whose story we would never know or hear. Let's fight them together. Justice is not a privilege, it's a right. People are being killed who could be saved.
I can't breathe. When the real holds you down, you're supposed to drown, right? When the real holds you down, you're supposed to drown, right? Wait, that don't sound right. Just wait 1 second, that don't sound right. When the real holds you down, you're supposed to drown, right? When the real holds you down, you're supposed to drown, right? Wait, that don't sound right. Just wait 1 second.
Late last year, Ohio death row inmate and prison rebel Keith Lamar, a.k.a. Bomani Shakur, went on a long hunger strike to prevent the prison administration from taking away his music, among other privileges. So when Keith and his fellow hunger striker Jason Robb won after 8 days, they not only forced the warden to move them to a better pod and grant them access to email, they defended their ability to keep books and music in their cells. During the time, Keith released a long list of the music that sustains him, ranging from Nina Simone to Eric Clapton to Kendrick's Butterfly. But in the wake of his victory, we asked him to go in depth about the music that's meant the most to him. To celebrate, we're sharing his response, including reflections on jazz, Ferguson, and survival. Reflections from Keith Lamar. Listen to Flamenco Sketches and you'll immediately understand why I was willing to starve myself in order to hold on to this record. This one song has brought me back from the brink countless times over the years. I've been listening to music my whole life since I was a kid. When I was 16 years old, my brother turned me on to jazz. I fell in love with it almost immediately. The first jazz musician I ever listened to was Grover Washington. His album Strawberry Moon really captivated and inspired me to delve deeper into the genre. The second most influential album I listened to was David Sanborn's Double Vision, and that really got me going. Even as my life was spiraling out of control, my grasp kept getting stronger. When I came to prison in 1989, I lost everything. Clothes, care, money, and nearly all of my so-called friends. But the one thing that stayed with me was the music. I was 19 years old when I first encountered Miles Davis's Kind of Blue, and it literally changed my life. I have never heard anything quite like it up until that time, and the poignancy and elegance of this one particular album helped heal my broken heart. It really did. It was from this one album that I was introduced to some of the greatest jazz musicians of all time: John Coltrane, Bills Evans, Paul Chambers, Cannonball Adderley, all giants, man. Listen to Flamenco Sketches and you'll immediately understand why I was willing to starve myself in order to hold on to this record. This one song has brought me back from the brink countless times over the years. I mean, you can't listen to this level of musicality without reaffirming your humanity. There's no way. And the same goes for A Love Supreme, John Coltrane. This was the second major recording I got my hands on. I was 20 years old. Without knowing anything about John Coltrane and his struggles, there was instant recognition in his tone and approach. Oh, I know this pain, this agony. I later learned that he had been hooked on heroin and underwent a spiritual transformation. Well, I had been hooked on cocaine and, after being baptized twice, once when I was 13 and again when I was 18, I finally succumbed to disillusionment and was totally outside of myself. I read about John Coltrane going up into his attic to play and study music. He would become so engrossed, so separated from everyday life, that he would forget to eat. And it just occurred to me that this is the level of pursuance that one has to attend to in life. You have to really reach for it. If you listen to part 4 of A Love Supreme, there's actually words that accompany the movement, which begins with, "I will do all I can to be worthy of thee, O Lord." So, you see, without sounding overly religious, I believe that we have to strive to make ourselves worthy of our struggles. And then there's Keith Jarrett's Ballad of the Sad Young Men. I love this piece. It starts off rather slow, suggesting peace and tranquility. And then the bass breaks away for an extended solo, representing the stumbling steps of someone who has lost his way, even as the piano and drums play very softly in the background. A marvelous piece. You know, the thing that perplexes me about jazz is that it's the only true original art form of the United States and created by black people, and it isn't really given its due. I mean, it isn't really lauded by mainstream society and therefore isn't fully appreciated by black people at all, which is a shame in my opinion. There's so much meaning in it, so much love and endurance. I'm sitting here listening to Dexter Gordon's Don't Explain, the piece made famous by Billie Holiday, who I also highly recommend. And it's telling me that there's just some things in this world that defy explanation. Slavery, poverty in the richest country in the world, Mike Brown, so on and so forth. Billie Holiday is singing about love and betrayal. I don't even want to hear it. This is how I feel about the decades I've spent in solitary confinement for something I didn't do. I don't want to hear it, man. I'm not trying to understand, so don't explain. You see? Another one of my favorite pieces is Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. I listen to it once or twice a week. It's a timely piece and could be easily applied to what's going on today. War is hell. When will it end? When will people start getting back together again? That's still the question. And it might be that we, as a civilization, are running out of time, running out of excuses to explain the abuses that we, in our ignorance, have heaped on humanity. So yeah, when the warden said I had to reduce my music down to 15 CDs, my whole being revolted. Music is the only thing that hasn't forsaken me, the one and only friend that hasn't let me down. And I would really rather be dead than give it up. And that's the truth, man. Peace, Keith Lamar.
Hush now, don't explain. You're my joy and pain. My life, yours, love, don't explain.
People benefit from the way things currently are, you know, the status quo. You know, a small, you know, group of people benefit from, you know, all of what's going on. And so it's going to take just normal, everyday people like you and I, people who, you know, for whatever, you know, to whatever extent live in different worlds. Like I'm talking to you from a cell on death row. You know, I mean, yet we're making this bridge, we're building this bridge to have this exchange. And so you might not be so fearful of somebody like me. And so, you know, and I might not be so fearful of somebody or you. I'm talking about your intentions, your expectations and whatnot. And so we just have to have, you know, build these bridges, meet somewhere in the middle and have these conversations, you know, and somehow acknowledge each other's humanity. It seems like that's the obvious way to kind of like, you know, do something about what's going on, to build, you know, these kind of societies that are cooperative as opposed to competitive, you know, in order for you to have, you know, food on your table, somebody have to starve. We have to, you know, kind of get away from that kind of, that get away from that dichotomy, you know, this or that, and, you know, really, you know, try to work. And I don't really have an answer on how actually to do it, but, I know that even in here, you know, where you have all poor people, guys that are here for prison, you still have these kind of, you know, hierarchies. You know, you have some guys who are treated better than other guys based on the crimes for which they were, you know, sentenced for, based on the amount of money that they're able to accumulate from their family and friends and whatnot. And so, you know, until we can just see people as people and treat people accordingly, nothing really is going to change. One of the things that I've been doing recently, I've started a reading project, Native Sons, because narrative is about stories. It's about dialogue, monologue, the stories that we tell ourselves, the story that other people tell about us. And in order to change the concept or change the narrative, you have to, you know, take control of the story. You have to think of as biography. That's the story that other people write about you. And autobiography is the story that you write about yourself. And so, you know, one of the things that I aim to do with my reading project is to get autobiographies into these young people, autobiographies of people who have been in similar situations as they find themselves in, and, you know, people who, you know, though placed in those situations, was able to overcome those situations, Malcolm X, Nelson Mandela, to name a few. But, you know, the person or the book that, you know, really had an impact on my life is Richard Wright, Native Son, and Black Boy's autobiography. But reading Native Son, that was the book that really captured my attention, you know, that really, you know, gave me a sense of how, you know, I became the person that I became, the role that I inhabited when I was young, and, you know, how it all, you know, snowballed into the self-fulfilling prophecy.
You have 1 minute remaining.
And then I read his autobiography, Black Boy. And I just read that book every day. I still listen to it now on CD almost every day, you know, just really, really just as a reminder of how important it is to, you know, to tell the story, to connect these threads and whatnot. And so, you know, reading, you know, if I was to try to implement, because, you know, a lot of these kids go to these inner city schools and, you know, they don't find, you know, stories that speak to them, that speak to the poverty that they're living through, you know, and how to come through that.
Break down and let it all out. Break down and let it all out.
Mm-hmm. could. Now my eyes can see it's all over for you and me, and holding back ain't gonna do no good. So I'm gonna break down and let it all out. Break down and let it all out. I've hidden my heart too many times before.
To find out what songs are featured on this episode, please visit our website, kitelineradio.noblogs.org. You can find more information about Bomani's story in his book, Condemned. His book and more information and updates can be found at keithlamar.org. This has been Kiteline. Anyone affected by the prison system in any form is welcome to write us via our P.O. Box, Kiteline Radio, P.O. Box 2422, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. Kiteline wants your feedback. You can reach us via email at kitelineradio@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Are you or someone you care about affected by the prison system? You can call us to record a message or share a story to be played on the air at 812-269-2517. Or you can use this number to record a message to a loved one. You can find previous episodes of Kiteline or more information on our stories at kitelineradio.noblogs.org. Kiteline is intended as a means of communication between people across the prison walls. We are not responsible for all views expressed on the program. WFHB, its contributors, or any affiliates airing this program are not responsible for the views expressed on the show. This has been Kiteline. Join us every Friday at 5:30 p.m. to hear more stories, news, and insights about Indiana's prison system and its impact on our communities. Thank you for listening.
Open arms. Stop hiding behind religion.